From the University of Arkansas at Little Rock, KUAR Public Radio brings you Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, the only program on radio today dedicated to the preservation of comparative generational thought, with your host, Phil Marriage. Welcome to the Crossroads of History.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another 2014 edition of Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow here in Little Rock. I'm Phil Marriage, your host. I'm really glad you guys can be here with us this afternoon. We're going to be covering a topic that I probably should have done years and years ago, but it just came to my attention in a conversation just a few weeks ago, and I thought I have not covered that subject, and I think it would be a very good one. We're going to be talking about blindness today. Many of you listening today probably are driving down the road. Obviously, you're seeing where you're going. You live in a world that is sighted, but there are many, many people around us who are dealing with issues related to sight. So that's what we want to talk about today. I have two guests with me here in the studio. I do want to mention before we get started, if you'd like to listen to the longer version of our program, you can go to yttshow.org or at kuar.org. Just click on the podcast sections there. You'll be able to listen to the longer edition of this program as well as many of our past programs. As I mentioned, I do have two guests with me here in the studio today. Speaking more or less from that younger generation is Chevy Moore. He's the public relations officer over at the Arkansas School for the Blind here in Little Rock. He's been there for about 9 years, and he's a senior right now. Chevy, glad to have you with me here today.
Glad to be here.
Also speaking for more or less from that middle generation, although she's pretty young herself, I'd say, is Lise Gagan. She's a secondary teacher there at the School for the Blind. She's been there also for about 9 years. Lise, glad to have you with us here today, too.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
As I mentioned in the little bit of an introduction to the program here, I was in a conversation with someone here a couple of weeks ago, and just in passing, the aspect of blindness was into the conversation. All of a sudden, a bell went off in my head. I thought, this is a topic that is very important. There are so many people in the world who are dealing with vision issues. I thought I'd take a look and see what the total statistics were for the state of Arkansas for blindness. And you guys might correct me if I'm wrong on here, but 93,100 in the state of Arkansas are dealing with vision issues from, I guess, total blindness to impairment in their vision. Does that number sound about right to you guys?
I've researched it a couple of days ago, and that sounds about right.
I also found a statistic nationwide that broke it down by race. Whites are about 4,800,000. African Americans about 1,100,000. Hispanics about 1,079,000. Asians 190,000, and a smattering of other groups in there. There are a huge number of people with blindness or vision issues. My first question, I guess, to both of you is, the world that you guys live in compared to the world of the sighted, are we not seeing you?
Well, I think part of what we try to accomplish at the school is to give our students the skills so that they can fit into society and not be segregated out as a separate group. So there's probably people who are hanging out with people who have visual impairments or total blindness, and you know, they're just kind of fit into the world. Those numbers that you're quoting represent all kinds of visual impairments. And it might be someone that has just a field loss or someone that's got central vision loss. It might be someone who's totally blind. So it might be interesting to actually look at some other stats that would break that down into ages. You know, of course, we have a lot of elderly people who are starting to lose their vision. You'd find a lot of people their needs would be met through like the VA. We're meeting the needs of school children. We've got school children throughout Arkansas who are being met in the public schools with vision teachers. We've got adults that are getting services through places like Lions World Services for the Blind and Divisional Services. But all those agencies work together to try to get people where they're functioning and able to continue their lives normally and fit into society. If we're doing our job well, those people are blending in, and maybe they aren't being seen because they're blended. They're fitting in.
I didn't mention also, when you came into the studio today, you have your seeing eye dog with you here, and his name is?
Yeah, I have Chopper with me, and he's a leader dog. He was trained at a school in Michigan called Leader Dogs for the Blind.
Let me just ask, I guess, probably a question that many people are afraid to ask, but since we're talking about blindness today, I'm going to go ahead and ask it. At what level do you see? Are both of you guys declared legally blind, or are you blind, or what?
I was born blind in my left eye, and I lost the vision in my right eye when I was 2. All I can see is light, so I would be considered pretty much totally blind. I have light perception. Chevy has quite a bit more functional vision than I do. You want to talk to them about?
I was born legally blind, and I'm colorblind also. I can see mainly colors. I just get them mixed up like a normal colorblind person would. Mm-hmm. I've been getting better with my colorblindness. I've been studying color cards and stuff so I can get my license and stuff like that. There's a main chance I won't be able to. And I have three younger brothers, and they all have same eye conditions and colorblindness.
We have all different kinds of vision loss at our school. We've got some children who can read regular print, some who use large print, some who use Braille. We have some who have vision that's fine in good lighting, but they have what would be called night blindness. So if they're traveling in the dark, they would use a cane, but they don't need a cane when they have good lighting. I mean, we've got just a wide variety of people, different functional levels of vision.
Sometimes when I see Miss Gagan right here walking, sometimes I swear she is not blind. So I swear she's not sometimes.
When you first got here and we went down to the other part of the office here, you mentioned that you could come back by yourself. How does that work, Lise?
I just paid attention to where we were going. I mean, I kind of draw a map in my head where you would draw sort of a visual map. I just map in my mind where we walk. You know, at the top of the ramp, we turned right and went down the ramp. Then we went around the thing to the left. And, you know, it's just...
And then just reverse the process?
Right.
Do you develop... You must have... Have you developed that ability, or is it just something that just is an innate almost?
I think I've always had pretty good spatial orientation, but when I was a young child, I was taught by an orientation and mobility specialist how to travel safely. I can travel safely with a cane or using the dog, and I've always gotten around real well. I mean, I'm a little bit of a crazy blind person. When I was a little girl, I would ride a bike around the neighborhood, and different objects blocked sound differently, so I could kind of hear where the trees were, the telephone poles were, and I'd just kind of turn my wheel and touch the grass every once in a while, make sure I knew where I was. People learn not to plant flowers by the sidewalk. You know, I've always just been, I may do it differently, but I can still get done what I need to get done. And tell me I can't, and I'll show you I will.
Well, yeah, now you're kind of leading me back into where we normally go with our program, which is generational comparisons on these different topics. And you talk about where you were when you were growing up, that type of thing. Take us back, if you will, as far as you can, and your knowledge of blindness issues. In days gone by, even before you were around, how is being blind different now than it was then?
Well, I think people have a whole lot of more education as far as awareness of disabilities. I think that people are more in the mainstream. They're, you know, they kind of associate with people with disabilities. It used to kind of be like, oh, you don't talk about that, you know, oh, that's private or whatever. And, you know, that's just kind of out there now, and people are a lot more open. I think, you know, even in schools, children are taught sensitivity training and things like that, and just kind of aware of disabilities.
Well, I did that myself just a few minutes ago, didn't I, when I was afraid to maybe ask you guys how well you could see. Is that something that, like you mentioned before, Lise, is that something in years gone by people just would ignore or pretend that they weren't seeing, using that word, the blind?
I don't know. I'm pretty approachable. I'm pretty open. I'll talk about anything. So I think I tend to break down those barriers for people. I'm very, you know, I'll talk about it. I'll even make jokes about being blind, like, oh, I'll drive and stuff like that. And, you know, I try to break down those barriers so that people are comfortable in asking questions. Some other people might be a little bit more private. There are times when you don't want to have to be the one that's always being the advocate and educating everyone, but I always look for opportunities. If somebody doesn't know, I'll try to educate them.
Well, Chevy, tell me a little bit about that younger group that comes into the school.
And we have kids all the way from kindergarten that are all the way blind, and they graduate from the school for the blind. We had past students actually go to Euler now that graduated from the school for the blind.
Do younger kids face the same sort of stigmatization that maybe the younger kids would have done in years gone by? Or as Lisa's saying, is it more of an open world even for these young people coming into the school?
When I was younger and stuff, I know that I try to act cool and stuff, and I wouldn't want people to know that I'm blind and stuff. I think that they would want to not be my friends or stuff like that when I went to public school. And I just grown where I don't even show it half the time. If you see me on the street or something, most people I know, they know my whole life, and they swear I'm not blind. I don't act like it or nothing. I can hunt. I can do everything that a normal human being can. Like she said, if you say I can't do it, my school knows not to say it because I will do it. Well, my mom and dad.
We do have some students that have come to us from other schools where they've been bullied and teased, right, because of their visual impairment. And that's something that we try to work with them and help them be more comfortable with who they are. I think if you're comfortable with your disability and you've gotten to a point where that's just something that you've learned to deal with, it's not a handicap to you anymore, it's not keeping you from doing what you need to do. I think if we can get to where we're comfortable in our own skin, that just passes on to other people. You know, if I'm all stressed out about my visual impairment and I'm not dealing with that well, or I'm allowing it to interfere with my ability to do something, then that's the perception that other people are going to get. Mm-hmm. If I'm there and I've got a system that I've figured out, or I'm going to work with someone to try and figure out how to do something, that just checks on to other people, I guess. They realize, okay, well, this might be different, but it's okay. You know, it just...
But is bullying or other social issues something that is getting better, or is it still like it used to be?
I think it's actually gotten a little better. Our population is coming more out, and people are seeing more and more disabled people, and I think they're getting more used to it and stuff and being more nice and kind to those people. I've been around it my whole life about, and I'm not going to lie, I was very bullied when I went to public school and when I first came to school.
You mentioned that there are a lot of younger kids at the Arkansas School for the Blind.
Yes.
Do any of those people or some or most of those younger kids come into the school from their other sources because they have faced some bullying? Is this a safer environment for them to grow up in?
Honestly, I think so, because at our Electric School for the Blind and Vision Player, we have the technology and we have the resources and stuff to give them what they want there. Like, some students might need Braille. We have the resources there to give Braille, large print. We have a CCTV, it's a TV that zooms in for them. We have different audio devices and stuff that would read the text to the people, to the student. We just have technology has gotten a lot better in general for disabled people and over the years too.
I think some students would definitely report that it's the best environment for them. Whatever school is determined for them, whether that's a public school placement or homeschool or in the school, you kind of look at what's going to be best for them. And some of our students really do report that it's a better environment for them. They feel more accepted. It gives them a chance to relate to other students that are facing some of the same things that they're dealing with. When I grew up, I went to public school. I didn't go to a school for the blind, and I didn't really have very much interaction with other students who were blind and visually impaired. And, you know, so my peers were always sighted, and I think that's perhaps why it's a little bit easier for me sometimes to fit in or adjust, because that was my peer group. That's what I knew. And so that was what was determined that was best for me. And, you know, we try to look at every student and decide what's best for them. And if they're at the school for the blind, that's, you know, that's been decided that for whatever reason, that's going to be the best placement for them. And for some of them, it is, so that they have a smaller group that they're working in. And
well, then let me ask you, I guess, a difficult question to really put into words, but is it better now that you have a school for the blind where so many people who have the same situation can be educated or be together? Or is it, in the long run, just as good to have been in the mainstream, let's use that word that they do so much in education, to mainstream people who have blindness issues?
I think you need to think of the whole education system as a continuum, and you've got lots of different educational opportunities, and you need to look at each student individually and decide what's best for that student. Some kids are going to thrive in the public school system, and others are going to thrive at the school for the blind. I don't really want to say one's better than the other. I hope my boss is okay with that, but I think it really just depends on the child. And, you know, some kids' needs are not being met in the public school, and some are having great public school experiences. My public school experience was awesome, but that's not always been the case for everybody. So you just have to look at individual schools, individual kids, and really determine what's best. So you just got to kind of think of that as all of those things are option for students in education.
Well, let me ask you, Lise Gagan, when you were growing up in school, were you with the same group of people, your same age group people all the way through in the same town sort of thing? Or did you move around much? Or did you have to redevelop a new system?
We moved when I was in fifth grade. That was the only time we moved. And that was kind of a rough year, but I think that would be rough on all kids, you know?
Yeah.
And I had really supportive parents. My family was very much about, you're going to do what everyone else does. And, you know, I always tell my students, they can't blind out. You can't use your blindness as a reason to get out of anything. You can't let your disability define who you are. Well, I don't want to be defined as the blind lady who happens to be a teacher. I'm a teacher who happens to be blind. So that emphasis is on who I am. I mean, it's like I'm a runner. It's not I'm a blind runner. I'm just a runner who happens to be blind. Or if so, whatever attribute of me that you want to pick out, whatever I accomplish, I don't want it to be about the blindness. I don't let that define me. It just happens to be another characteristic of me.
Let me ask you guys about the word segregation. And I don't mean racial segregation. I'm talking about segregation in the sense that you are with a group of people who are commonly the same in the sense that you're with people with vision issues. Do you find yourselves living in a world that wants that segregation to continue as you grow through life? Or how do you fit into the other part of the world after you leave the school for the blind?
Well, like, I'm going to graduate on May 22nd. That's my graduation day. And yeah, I'm
he's
say
counting
that.
It down.
That's a ways off.
Don't remind me. Yeah, a lot can happen since then. But after I graduate, I'll try to keep contact with my friends at the school of blind. They're, of course, they're legally blind too. But I know I'm trying to be a photographer. I've got a camera. I'd take awesome pictures. I always have. And I told someone that and said, they said, aren't you visually impaired? I was like, yeah, your point is. He said, how's that going to work? I'm like, the camera has autofocus on it. And if I sit there long enough, I can tell if it's blurry or not. I don't know if I'll keep actual contact with people I know over the years that are legally blind, visually impaired, the word you want to use. I don't know. It just depends, honestly, the person.
My social life is probably more with people who are not blind or visually impaired.
Same here. I have more that's not blind and they're older than me.
There are some people who are very comfortable with the blind community, so to speak, and most of their friends are blind or visually impaired, but, I mean, that's just sort of a personality thing, I think. I hang out with people at church, I sing with a group, I run with folks. I mean, I do, you know, when I go to the gym, I don't go to the blind gym, I go to the gym. You know, when I go to church, it's not the church for the visually impaired. So there's certainly organizations out there that people can be part of as a blind or visually impaired person, but there's no reason why you can't be part of the regular world, so to speak. So I think that's kind of a personal preference. And when I first took the job at the School for the Blind, I had been working in Texas and I taught regular ed preschoolers. So I worked with sighted kids for years. There was a part of me that almost didn't want to take the position at the School for the Blind because I didn't want people to say, oh, she works at the School for the Blind because she's blind. No, I work for the School for the Blind because I'm a teacher and they need a teacher. And I happen to be certified in, you know, science and English and whatever else that I teach. But I also can teach blind and visually impaired kids. And it's kind of like you're talking about. I don't want to be put in that stereotype. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just as much of a teacher. In fact, I have more education because I've got the special ed certification. So it's, you know, you hate to kind of be labeled, oh, you have to hang out with this group or that group. You know, I think if people segregate, it's their choice. And that's harder for some people than others. Some people would like the safety of the people that they're like, I guess, or that they know. But always pushing the edge. I'm always pushing the envelope a little bit. So.
Well, now, you talked a little bit about your job situation there, Lisa, and that really leads me into one of the other questions I had to ask you guys about the difference between getting a job, going to work now compared to in years past. Is it much easier to get a job no matter what it is?
Well, I think it's hard for anybody to get a job right now, although we're starting to see that come around with our economy a little bit. Something that I tell my students is, as you're preparing for your career, you can't just get by. When you go into that interview, whether they tell you or not, they're not going to tell you, oh, we're not sure we want to hire you because of your visual impairment, because they can't tell you that. It's illegal for them to do that, but that's in their head. It's like, you've got to sell yourself even better than the best, and mediocre's not going to do it. So I think it's always hard to get a job when you have a visual impairment because you have to prove not only that you can do the job, but that you can do the job despite your disability. And I do think in some respects working is much easier because of the technology that we have these days. The access to computers and things like that, using speech and large print and things like that, is so superior to what it used to be. So it kind of levels the playing field a bit. There's jobs that people could do now because of technology that just wouldn't have been possible in the past. So I think that helps.
Chevy, tell me a little bit about where technology is today.
Oh, technology, it's changed over the year past. It'll change tomorrow. It won't be like today. Like, you might have a new iPhone or something like that. They have a voiceover. it'll read this stuff on your screen for you, or it'll read your text message, or you can browse the internet over text, or over you have VoiceOver on. It'll read what's on your screen to the person. They have like dictations, like I have dyslexia too, speech, and I can't spell hardly. I use Dragon Dictation. I speak into my phone, and it will put in words. The person had it on here, they probably had like a Zoom Text or Jaws or something like that. A software that will read the screen to you. I know something called an Apex. It's like a laptop, but it's not in the shape of a laptop. It's like a little box, and has a braille cells on it, and they type just like a human person can do on a laptop. It's basically the same thing as a laptop, but someone that knows braille, who's visually impaired. Mm-hmm. Form, and just it's changed. I bet in 20 years it's gonna be better than it is today. Well, course it will be.
I bet in 20 years there'll be a car I can drive. There's actually a car out right now that there's a Google car that the National Federation for the Blind has developed that actually gives.
That's what you're waiting on, isn't it, Lise?
Yeah, that's the only thing. You know, most things I don't really get frustrated with. I just do them differently. You know, whatever you're gonna do, I'll do it differently. But I do wish I had the freedom to just jump in a car and go. Mm-hmm. You know, living in Little Rock. There's public transportation. There's buses, cabs. I can walk a lot of places. I have a great network of folks I can catch rides with. But I want to go to the beach this weekend. Well, maybe nobody else wants to go, you know? So, I don't know. I'm always gone. I'm never home. So if I could drive, I can't imagine what it would be like. I'd never be home.
I think you would be at school.
Now, you mentioned the word braille. And, of course, though myself not having a situation involving sight impairment, I don't see braille that often. Although when I come to the studio, each one of our doors in front has the braille indication of whatever it says on the sign there. Is braille still as important as it maybe once used to be, or has it been passed up by these other technologies?
Well, if you were to look at the, do some more research with those statistics that we were looking at, and we took that and looked at those people who are actually employed, Usually you'll find statistics that show that people who are employed have a good literacy tool. And some of our students at the school are using large print and have great literary skills. And then we have some who use Braille. So we embrace the technology, but we really encourage students to develop great Braille skills also. It's just good to have that reading skill, a way to write. Readers are leaders, that kind of thing. And I totally endorse using audio technology. But
now, do you use Braille, Lise?
Yes, I use Braille and I use speech on my computer.
And what about you, Chevy? Do you use Braille?
No, sir.
You do not?
No.
Do you know Braille?
I know one letter, that's A.
He doesn't really need Braille because he has enough vision to use print. For our students that do not have enough
when I first
vision
came
to,
the,
to read print.
Sorry. When I first came to the school, I always wanted to learn Braille because I was a fourth grade student. I thought it was a cool secret message, like type spy thing when I first saw it.
And it's a secret code.
Yeah, I always thought it was. I just seen people in my class using it. I'm like, I want to learn it. And I actually used to know A through J, and I just never actually started doing it anymore, and I just forgot. I just know A now.
Some people use Braille, even if they don't use it for reading extensive materials. They'll use it for things like labeling medications or labeling cans in their cupboard, things like that. So even if it's not for, you know, reading long books or whatever, it's still a great skill to have.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of social networks, obviously everybody talks about Facebook as a social network and all the other ones, Twitter and everything. Is social networking different in the blind world than it is, or is it the same pretty much?
I think it's the same. It's just like we talked about, we've got the technology now, so we can access Facebook and Twitter just like everyone else can. And we put up goofy pictures and put stupid statuses and do all the crazy stuff that everyone else does. We did our ice challenges and, you know, just whatever other people are doing. So my phone actually is kind of cool because I have an iPhone and I use the VoiceOver, which anyone who has an iPhone, they have that feature on there. You could go into your settings and turn that on and kind of play with it, see what it's like. When I go to take pictures, it actually tells me one face centered, two faces. So you can actually even take, I can do a pretty good selfie.
If there's something about talking about blindness that those of us who are sighted ignore, What is it that we ought to know?
We're just like you. People, they put us in one class. We're just like everybody else. We just might need help doing separate things, but we're just like every other human being on Earth. There might be one student right here that could shoot better than another or ride a bike better than another. And they might be able to, some person that's visually impaired might be able to do something way better than they can that they can't do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know someone that's totally blind and he can shoot basketball. He can shoot goals better than I can. I know one of my friends, he's blind. He's a Boy Scout. And over the summer, this badge he wanted to get before he turned 18, it was a...
His eagle. He got his eagle bag.
Yeah, he got his eagle bag. And then over the summer, he went to a camp that he was able to shoot a shotgun and guns. And actually, he shot every target.
Well, I think just like all sighted people, you can't take sighted people and just put them in one big category. People are different. They've got different personalities, different skill sets, different ambitions, different levels of laziness, motivation. Some people are happy. Some people are grumpy. And that's the same thing is true for blind and visually impaired people. You've got some that are really smart, some that aren't as smart, some that are... And I think that's kind of what Chevy's trying to say. We're really just people who happen to have... problems with their eyes.
Have either of you guys had much experience with somebody very, very old?
Over my life, I've always known at least someone's older than me that's blind. My uncle's blind. He's 27-ish. He's in 20s. I know that. He graduated the school from blind. I know people. The president of the alumni, she's, I think she can see enough light to get around and enough movement, enough shadows to get around. But I know she graduated from the school of blind, and I've always known people older than me that are vision blind. We have another teacher at our school. She's blind. She's our English teacher.
We've definitely seen in across our country more and more elderly people who are blind and visually impaired. See a lot of macular degeneration. When you're someone who loses your vision, you know, later in life, you know, and that could even happen as a young adult, you know, from an accident or a disease. Or then, like we were talking about the elderly people, that's a whole different kind of situation because you're used to doing things as a sighted person, and now you've got to have some kind of rehabilitation to learn how to function without vision.
If there's someone listening to the program today who has a child in the realm of education years, how would they contact the School for the Blind, and what should they do?
If I would say anybody listening would like information about it, go to our websites, or they have different organizations like Ms. Gagan was saying, like DSB, the Services for the Blind, or Blind's World, or what's it called now?
Road
Services for the Blind. Arkansas School for the Blind phone number is 501-296-1810.
296-1810.
All of the children that we serve are actually referred to us by their public school. So if a student lives in Fayetteville and it's decided that the School for the Blind would be the best placement for them instead of them receiving services at their home school, not, I don't mean their school, like in their house, like their district, then they are referred to the School for the Blind by that school district. And their parents, you know, can do that through the public school.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about blindness here today on Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow. I do want to thank both my guests for being with me here in the studio. Chevy Moore is the public relations officer over there at the Arkansas School for the Blind, and he's been there for about 9 years. Chevy, thanks for being with me here today.
Pleasure's all mine. Thank you.
And then also, Lisa Gagan has been here speaking more or less from that middle generation perspective. She's a secondary teacher there at the School for the Blind. Lisa, really glad you guys could be with us here today.
It was fun. Thank you for having us.
And as I mentioned at the outset of the program, if you'd like to listen to the longer version, you can go to our website at yttshow.org or at kuar.org. You can click on the podcast buttons there. Thanks for listening this evening. We'll see you next time.